You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Plaza Hotel has held a special place in the hearts of New Yorkers for over eight decades, first as a playground for the rich and famous, and later when it became the unlikely setting for a series of books about an endearing character named Eloise. But the fate of this New York institution changed in 2004 when it was bought by a billionaire who sparked outrage with his plans to transform most of the hotel into condos. Despite the controversy, many of the well-heeled lined up to grab a slice of New York history, a dream that quickly turned into a nightmare with accusations of shoddy workmanship, bad design, and a slew of lawsuits and countersuits. It's the subject of Eloise Sheds a Tear, Evgenia Peretz's article in the current issue of Vanity Fair, and Ms. Peretz joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you.
Why do you think that the Plaza has such a special place in the heart of New York? Because it isn't the best hotel we have. Never was.
I think the Plaza has a really unique combination of qualities. The first is it's incredibly glamorous, and it's been associated with so many fabulous people. I mean, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Jackie Onassis, Eloise, as you say. So it had that, but it was also something that really belonged to everyone. And anybody could go in, and people from any kind of background, you know, often they would rent out the grand ballroom for bar mitzvahs and weddings. And it was just really a unique place where sort of the average Joe could step in and feel really just glamorous.
And a special setting as well. I mean, it's not
location. It's right on the corner of 58th and Central Park South. And, you know, so there are hansom cabs, and it's, you know, it's a really dreamy location.
It's been sold a number of times in recent years to owners from all over the world. Have all of them understood this relationship and its importance?
I think, you know, the previous owners, Conrad Hilton and the Trumps, you know, when they, there was always a little bit of anxiety when, you know, there was going to be a new owner. People are a little afraid of change. But I think, you know, one main thing they didn't do was change it into condos. I mean, this was, they clearly loved this as a hotel. That's what it was meant to be.
So Donald Trump did change things, didn't he?
He did.
There was a lot of anger at the time.
Yeah, I mean, there was sort of, you know, it was the 80s, and there was a lot of yellow and gild and, you know, paint added that sort of, you know, some might not have really liked it aesthetically. But in terms of its main purpose, they weren't going to change that.
Now, who's the current owner? Is this a place that he's always wanted to own?
The current owner is a man by the name of Itzhak Shuva. He's an Israeli billionaire who has gotten into real estate probably in the past 10, 15 years. And most of his real estate is high-end residential condos. And his CEO lives in New York City. His name is Mickey Naftali. He's the one that I interviewed really at length. I certainly got the feeling from talking to Mr. Naftali that this wasn't some sort of romantic dream of theirs. They had just come off of the disappointment of not being able to buy the Mayflower Hotel, which has subsequently turned into another high-end condo, 15 Central Park West. So, you know, it seems like that's really what they wanted to do, was turn this into condos. It wasn't an emotional attachment.
We received a letter from a lawyer who represents tenants in one of the other properties. This company, El Ad, has had contentious relationships with its tenants everywhere.
Yes, that's right. First of all, there's a residential condo in Chelsea that's had a number of problems that, you know, ranging from pipes that haven't been installed properly and are being held up by bricks in the wall and sort of live wires found inside walls. Other problems that just have not been addressed by El Ad. They've tried to for years, and they really just, I mean, according to the members of this condo who I spoke with, they really just are being completely ignored.
Well, Elad's plans for the plaza sparked a Save the Plaza campaign. Who was behind that?
When they initially bought the plaza, the hotel workers union was very upset because they have 900 workers. They had 900 workers, I should say. And they were basically told that the rooms that were involved in food service, so that would be the Grand Ballroom and the Palm Court, this is according to them now, that those were, they were going to get rid of them, and they therefore wanted to get rid of the employees. And they were, Elad said, you know, we're going to give them regular severance, and the hotel workers union pushed for double severance, pointing out that, you know, these some of these employers have been here for 30 to 40 years. And according to them, Elad didn't want to go for that, and this really angered the hotel workers union, and that's really when they decided to launch this incredible campaign called Save the Plaza, and it just completely took off, and lots of celebrities came on board, Matthew Broderick and Liza Minnelli, and even Mayor Bloomberg, who was really sort of a neutral arbitrator in this, but he really was very sympathetic to the hotel workers. And this even went, this campaign even traveled to Israel, where the where Mr. Shuva's from. A couple of hotel workers from the plaza went there, and they were trying to sway public opinion about him. And it was covered every day in all the papers, and I think it was a real winner, and it really sort of, you know, they got the public relations battle.
And they forced Elad to change some of the plans.
They did. That pressure, I mean, there would be nothing legal preventing Elad, you know, from doing what they wanted, but I think the once that battle had been waged, they saw that, you know, public opinion was really against them turning this beloved landmark hotel into condos. And so they really had to scale back their plans.
Well, they are, they've kept the Oak Room and the Grand Ballroom open, but they have still made most of the rooms into condos.
A critical part of the Save the Plaza campaign was making sure that some of these interior space would be landmarks. So, yeah, so they couldn't get rid of the ballroom. There was some talk of maybe putting, you know, a department store going through there. They couldn't get rid of the Palm Court. And they sort of capitulated to some degree, and they agreed to keep some hotel rooms. Now, mind you, these hotel rooms are all looking on the 58th Street side, so not quite as fantastic as looking out onto the park.
My guest is Evgenia Peretz. Her article, Eloise Sheds a Tear, is in the current issue of Vanity Fair magazine. So most of the hotel was changed into condos. How much did these apartments go for?
These apartments, basically the smallest apartments, which I saw, they're sort of somewhere between a studio and a one-bedroom, were going for about $3 million. And the highest went for, I think, $67 million. But this was, you know, often the owners would buy a couple of units and they would combine them.
And who was buying them?
Well, a lot of billionaires from all over the world. Russian billionaires, one of whom is involved in a very hot lawsuit with the plaza owners, Italian millionaires, and there were also, a smattering of New Yorkers, James Cain, who had been the head of Bear Stearns, Robert Kraft, who owns the Patriots, Simon Fuller, the man who created American Idol, Susie Orman, Tommy Hilfiger, Guy Wildenstein, a high-profile art dealer in town.
And so they bought these condos, and then came time to move in. What did they think of the apartments that they had bought for?
Well,
pretty high amounts. $3 million, you say, for a studio.
A glorified studio, let's say that. But this was absolutely top dollar because this was, up to $6,000 a square foot. So this was absolutely top dollar for New York. And the key thing about the condos is that none of the buyers were actually able to see their apartments at any stage during the construction, which isn't so unusual for a new condo. But what was quite remarkable to me is that when some of the people asked for elevations, which would include exact ceiling heights, a real three-dimensional look at what the apartment would turn out to be, they were told that they really didn't exist, which is odd because in order to build a building, you do need elevations. So, of course, they existed. So they really had to go by what was in the offering plan, which is kind of I looked at the offering plan, and it's a lot of legalese. It's kind of vague. Ceiling heights are described as, between, 8 feet and 11 feet. So,
8 feet being low and 11 feet being nice.
I think it was, 9 feet was maybe the low side. In other words, there was a range, and I think people didn't have an exact idea of what they were getting, which is not necessarily.
But it was also the materials that bothered people.
Yes.
Marble and mahogany that turned out to not be what they'd imagined.
Right. Well, this is more on the hotel side of things. I found out through one of my sources inside the hotel that the materials aren't quite as luxurious and opulent as the owners would would have you believe. I think for a typical condo to be using things like, particle board instead of real mahogany for a closet, let's say, or a fiberglass molding instead of a wooden or plastic molding is fine for sort of a mid-level condo. But when you're charging between $1,000 and $20,000 a night and saying that this is the absolute best hotel room you are going to find in the world off the charts, then, it seems like, you're not quite getting exactly what you're paying for.
My guess is Evgenia Peretz. Her article, Eloise Sheds a Tear, is in the current issue of Vanity Fair. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. We're back with Evgenia Peretz. Her article, Eloise Sheds a Tear, is in the current issue of Vanity Fair. Evgenia, we received a statement from Lloyd Kaplan, who I think is the attorney who is defending the plaza, and he writes this. I'm going to read the whole statement so nobody can accuse me of censoring or editing. Vanity Fair reporter Evgenia Peretz ultimately pays tribute to the magnificent $400 million restoration of the great landmark spaces in the plaza after thousands of words of carping and churlish gossip. She almost catches herself saying, complaining, let's remember, is probably New Yorker's favorite pastime. The restoration has been praised by the city's Landmarks Commission and won a prestigious industry award as the Renovation Project of the Year. Perhaps most tellingly, the impressive collection of photographs by celebrated photographer Todd Eberle that accompanies the Vanity Fair story portrays the reality of a magnificent landmark that has been faithfully and gloriously restored. The story is at best lopsided, given a false and exaggerated impression of owners' satisfaction. The story gives credence to anyone with anything negative to say, regardless of the source or merits. The story is full of blind or unnamed sources and relies on unsubstantiated, baseless claims. Its clear intent seems to be to tarnish rather than report. Elad saved the plaza. It purchased an icon, but one in desperate need of restoration. The roof leaked. Ceilings in 65 rooms had collapsed. There were buckets under tables in the Palm Court to collect water when it rained. It was too hot in the summer and too cold in the winter. Elad preserved the plaza's heritage and also gave it new life for visitors and New Yorkers to enjoy and create new memories for generations. Ultimately, the proof is there for us all to see. New Yorkers and visitors from all around the world are invited to check both propaganda and hyperbole at the door and judge the plaza for themselves. Do you feel chastened?
No.
You do say that there are some nice, some good things that happened during this changeover.
Yeah. And I indeed do talk about how the roof was leaking and there was a lot of rain damage, and so they really did some important stuff. And those the rooms that were the public spaces that were got to be landmark really have been improved in some lovely ways, which I do write about. So I'm not sure what he means when I say when he says that I don't. In terms of the buyers of the apartments, I also included three people who we spoke with who were happy. And I think the people who were most pleased with their apartment lived on the lower floors where the ceilings are higher and the windows are bigger. The people who have been really unhappy in general lived on the higher floors where, you know, and I've seen these apartments where they were, you know, expecting floor-to-ceiling windows and instead got, you know, sort of square windows in one case. The Russian in the penthouse, Andrei Vavilov, this case has been in the press a bit. You know, he saw there was big giant columns in the middle of his room and much smaller windows than he anticipated. And, you know, I looked at the evidence and the model that he had been shown versus what he actually got. And I really, you know, I really looked at it with an open mind. And after seeing that, I said to myself, you know, I would be pretty pissed too. It looks really so misleading. And after spending, you know, $53 million, that's, wow. You know, that's a big disappointment.
So he's one of the people who's suing?
He's one of the people who's suing. Another woman who's named in the piece, she wasn't able to see her apartment either. And there was a stairwell that was going through her mother's bedroom, which she hadn't been told about. It didn't appear on any floor plan. It wasn't described in the offering plan. And she would have never had known about this because she wasn't able to see the apartment.
Was it a duplex or was the staircase connecting a room to something else?
No, it was two connecting apartments that didn't really actually connect. That was another problem. But it was part of a stairwell of another area of the building that sort of cut through her mother's bedroom.
That's odd.
Yeah.
Well, did all the apartments sell?
It did. It almost sold out completely. It sold out very well. But now there are quite a number back on the market. I mean, that may have changed in the past few weeks since everything's, you know, gone so downhill. And I imagine some people have taken their apartments off the market. But
because
yes,
they can't sell. You can't sell a
exactly.
house in a good neighborhood anywhere
yeah,
these days.
Yeah, yeah. But I think in September, very early September, before this economic collapse, there were maybe 30 or more apartments back on the market. And some of these people were actually trying to, like, double their money.
So some people bought these as investments.
They might have been, you know, or maybe they were just thinking, hey, I don't like it, but maybe someone else will pay double what I paid.
You talk about a strategy called implying used by Elad to mm-hmm. attract retailers. How does that work?
Well, sources that I spoke with who are involved in trying to fill up their retail space. So they have 39,000 square feet of retail space, basically a mall down in the basement, which they hadn't had before, anything close to that.
They've had a lot of retail space on the ground level.
They had some, but it wasn't anything close to a big mall. According to numerous sources that I spoke with, there was these sources didn't feel comfortable with the way that Elad was trying to attract the big names. They wanted, you know, the Ralph Lauren's and the Gucci, you know, those big names to come, and they seem to imply that other ones had already committed or were interested, which would in turn attract new ones to the mix, when in fact, you know, those shops hadn't signed on at all. You know, a lot of them have stores already on Fifth Avenue or in Bergdorf's or Barney's. So, you know, and some people have said, well, this is, you know, standard for the business. There's always a little bit of, you know, let's say, stretching the truth or exaggerating the interest. But it seemed like seasoned people in the retail business who talked to me did seem that it did sort of step over the boundaries.
Any number of restaurants and people in the food business dropped out, didn't they? They were interested and then they pulled out?
Yeah, well, in terms of filling up the Oak Room with the new restaurateur, that was sort of a similar situation to the stores. One restaurateur told me that they said, you know, you need to sign on now because if you don't, then Jean Georges will or Danny Meyer, they're going to do it. And this restaurateur just called them up on the phone and said, are you really? And they said, no, not at all. We're not considering it. So it seemed like there was sort of a pattern of making it seem like they were really going to miss out if they didn't.
Now, we've gotten a number of calls a few people have also left messages on our mm-hmm. comments page. And they say, why should we care about these rich people who had enough money to be better consumers? These are the same kinds of people who will quibble about much less money. They even though they're very rich, they nickel and dime.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think that's a good point, and that's one thing I might have underlined more in my piece. You know, what kind of person is going to spend $30 million on an apartment that they can't see? I mean, you have to wonder, is money just really no object that you're throwing it around just because it's the Plaza? I mean, it's sort of like these high-end real estate label whores in a way.
Did you ask them?
You know, I did, and I think for a lot of these people, there was sort of a magic attached to the Plaza, and maybe they were naive. I mean, obviously, they had, money to burn, but they were also naive probably a little bit and thinking, you know, this is the Plaza. How could it not be great? You know, I want a piece of that.
But this probably would not mean much to people if it weren't the Plaza, if it were some other hotel, even if it were some pretty good hotel. The Pierre, for example.
Yeah. What do you mean?
They wouldn't because there are a lot of people who really mm-hmm. wouldn't ever imagine buying a place
right.
at the a condo at the Plaza, but who still love the
sure.
Plaza simply because
yeah.
it's a beautiful building.
Yeah.
And it's a place that they may very well have had
right.
Some special experience at.
Yeah.
They went to a party there.
Yeah, I mean, I can completely understand
it. Court.
I mean, I remember when I first heard that that the Plaza was being turned into condos, thinking, oh, that's so romantic. Imagine having an apartment there. I mean, I've since changed my opinion on that, but I can understand it. And, you know, maybe if I had had that much money, you never know. But so I think, yes, that made a big difference in terms of people buying them sight unseen. I also think, to be fair to the new owners of the Plaza, people are going to jump on the Plaza and be very critical of any change. And that's just what comes with buying such a treasured landmark, really.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. Evgenia Peretz's article, Eloise Sheds a Tear, is in the current issue of Vanity Fair.
Thank you so much.